Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That, friends, was the voice of one of the more cogent people to walk this earth, Brian Brown, who created the Brown Briefly. Together we, the Brieflies, keep Brian's creative flame alive by bringing to you every week another episode of intelligent discussion, we hope, of current events laced with humor and empathy, always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. So let's introduce the Brieflies and our guests. Today, engineering the show from behind the board at the Voice of Vachon's Jean Bosch Broadcast Studio in bustling, bodacious downtown Vachon, flight instructor, Vachon Airport Commissioner, treetop flyer, West Texas Roughneck, and current treetop flyer. Did I say that twice? Truman O'Brien. Good yeah, morning, Truman.
That's all right. It was worth it. It was worth hearing it twice. No problem. Yeah.
Awesome. Make sure to get in all the notable achievements and accomplishments.
There you
yes.
go. There
also,
you go.
Sitting next to Truman, as usual, with enough past work experience to fill several of our shows, former tow truck repo man, Teamster apprentice, auto mechanic, former Washington State assistant attorney general, constitutional law and torts professor, two-time Half-Bright scholar, and international arbitrator, Craig Bellis. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning, Kevin. Good morning, Brieflies. Good morning, guests.
And speaking of guests, let's welcome decades-long Vachon Mori veterinarian, design builder extraordinaire, skipper of the Ariki, former Quartermaster Yacht Club Commodore, and recent past commissioner of the Vachon Healthcare District, Don Walsko. It's great you could join us today, Don.
Yeah, thanks for the invite, Kevin, and good to be here, and hopefully we'll have some thoughtful discussion.
I'm looking forward to that. It's also our pleasure to introduce former Vachon Mori Island Community Council president, who revived that same council with some modifications in 2020 after a near decade of dormancy, and who is also a current attorney with a rich history of supporting social justice causes. David Vogel, it's great you could join us today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And we definitely want to join in our guardian of the galaxy, zooming in from his home away from home in the Southern Hemisphere, historian extraordinaire, owner, operator, skipper of the Vashona, president of Vachon's Heritage Museum, our globe-trotting guardian of the galaxy and official party animal, Bruce Hallman. Hey, Bruce, how's Wednesday looking?
Wednesday's looking good. You guys have a lot to look forward to, I can tell you that.
Fantastic. Always good. Once you're on the other side of the international dateline, you get that peek into the future that we all are looking forward to. Hey, mine is the voice of Indivisible Vachon in the Vachon Climate Action Group. Get out your pens and pencils, because I'm going to have you write something down quickly. We're striving to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate or at least tolerate. If you'd like to strive along with me, go to, get your pencils ready, bit.ly/TANelections to receive information by email to support your highest priority 2024 election outcome. In addition, I invite you to join me this Friday at Swiftwater Gallery, 2 p.m. This is Friday, the 9th of February, where the Vachon to Voters postcarding group will meet to write voters in Ohio. Bring yourself and your pen and postcard stamps if you have them. Everything else is provided, and I will see you there if you have the opportunity to stop by. So, okay, all the preliminaries behind us. Our usual practice, let's take a moment to check in with everybody about what special things you've experienced this last past week. Bruce, how's life in Australia and New Zealand?
Yes, it's been an exciting week. As always in Australia, we're here for Australia Day, which has become a contested holiday. It's kind of Australia's 4th of July, but it's become very contested. It's either Australia Day or Invasion Day from the perspective of Native people, of Indigenous, Aboriginal people. And so the day was marked by parades and fireworks, but also protests. There was a huge Share the Spirit Aboriginal music concert in the Melbourne Bowl. So it's an interesting sort of time in Australia, and sort of like what we've experienced with Columbus Day. It's a day that's no longer celebrated in the way that it was. Australia Day is actually January 26th is the day that the first fleet landed in Sydney and established colonial Australia. And so it's become a contested day, but it's fascinating. But spent the weekend down at the beach, at the surf beach, and it was just enjoyable. Temperatures near 100, so warm, but being on the coast with cool breezes coming in, it was just fantastic. And tomorrow we take off for New Zealand, and Don will be just south of Whangarei for a while. So I know you've been there.
Yeah, spent almost 6 months there.
Wow.
Cool. All right, so we may have to add surfer to Bruce's litany of successes here. Craig, how has your week been treating you?
Well, it's been treating me well. I won't bore you with my fight over the ABS lights on my truck that I had with the dealership. I diagnosed it as being one thing, but they wanted to sell me 14 other things that go along with it that really aren't necessary. But be that as it may, the week for me was marked by the first Thursday morning scramble, which my co-host Mike Nichols, the master of the mouth harp, and I had 3 hours Friday morning, and we did nothing but love songs on February 1st in honor of the February, the month of love. And that is archived on the voiceofashen.org website. You go to shows and look up Morning Scramble, and you will see it right there, and you can play all or part of it at your leisure.
Mm-hmm. So you heard it here second on the Brown Briefly, but first on the Morning Scramble.
That's right.
Awesome. David, how is Vashon Moore Island treating you this last week?
Doing fine. I had an arbitration in California yesterday, and it's the benefit of having Zoom in the legal practice. Oh. There were some things that came out of the pandemic that have been good for the practice. And then the news today that Donald Trump does not have immunity, it was a pleasant piece of news, not unexpected. And some people are saying, well, that took so long, a month for a court of appeals to write a 57-page opinion is not a long time. But hopefully things will proceed apace.
Yes, 2 pages a day. Maybe we could compare past performance. All right. Thanks for bringing that up, David. And, of course, we have now 2 people affiliated with the law profession here. So we might have some very interesting discussions after we talk about our community solar on Vashon.
And we have the other Brieflies who probably had run-ins with the law. So
there you go. We have different perspectives.
I resemble that remark. Come on.
Well, speaking of that, Truman, how are you doing this week?
Well, doing great. I had a run down to Texas. I went down on Thursday and came back on Saturday. Had a wonderful time with my cousin and his family, and got to spend some time with his daughter's corgi dog, which I thoroughly enjoyed. And the dog took to me, and she said, she's only reacted that way with one other person. I said, she knows I'm a corgi person. Come on. But hey, I'll tell you, I did 2 things I learned. One, that my Texas cousin and I, our politics are actually fairly well aligned, pretty much down the line. A couple of slight modifications, but I was pleased about that. And the other thing I learned was that I am really glad that I don't fly for a living anymore, because I was absolutely whipped when I got home. It was about 12 hours on the road of driving and taking a bus and the train and the airplane and the boat. And when I got home, I was a rag, man. And for the next day, I thought, boy, if I maintained the schedule that I used to maintain, I'd be limp as a rag most of the time. So, but anyway, had a wonderful time, and it was a great week. So there you go.
All right, and welcome back, and back on the controls of the Gene Bosch Downtown Studio. So rapid recovery.
Thank you. Yeah.
Don, well, glad you could join us. How has your week been treating you?
Well, it's been a pretty quiet week. I had first day of surgery yesterday, so had a little bit of morning surgery to do, which was pretty interesting. I had been retired for about a year, and they called me back because they lost a couple of associates, so I'm filling in a couple days a week. So that was yesterday, and a few weeks ago, I strained my calf, so my running had been curtailed, and I'm slowly working it back up. So this morning I put in 4 miles, I do something I call 50-50s, where I will have a fast walking pace for 50 paces, and then I'll run for 50 and back and forth, and that seems to, my legs seem to tolerate that a little better. And then as I was getting closer and closer to the 4 mile mark, I was more like 80-20. So then I kicked myself because I did the same thing about 10 days ago, and towards the end that I could feel a strain again. So I have to be patient and know that I'm not 40 anymore, and know those things take more time. So yeah, so that's been about it. Bicycled up this morning. Been a nice, cool, but not intolerable day here. We're not getting anywhere close to 100 today, I don't think, Bruce, but we may top out at about 45.
It is good bicycling weather, and it's not too rainy, so that's always a plus in my book. Don, just to clarify, the surgery that you mentioned, you were in this case the surgeon, I assume.
Yeah. Yeah, I was on the vertical part of the in the surgery suite.
Okay, very good. Just wanted to clarify that. Let's see. I will say that I had a chance to get out and walk around the property here. We're on 2.5 acres down here, south of the old Wax Orchard airstrip. And the windstorm that came through a while back didn't seem to make much of a difference when I was sitting like in the living room. But out and about, there are some branches that came off some of our fir trees, which, just a cautionary note, if you're out wandering around on Vashon in the windstorm, do it in an open field. I did haul some of those branches out of the woods, and they were like 5 to 6 inches in diameter. And sliced up, they make a fairly good-sized pile of firewood. So you wouldn't want them to come down on top of your head. Truman, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, I had a branch come out of very, very high up in a fir tree, and it hit the best looking gate I have on my property and bent the heck out and broke the post. So, yeah, I completely agree. I'm very lucky that that horse was in the other corral and not in that one, because it could have taken out the horse as well.
I had heard that at least three people died in California being struck by falling trees in the most recent storm that they had down there.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, between the wind and mudslides and all that, yeah, can be hazardous to your health. All right, with that note, why don't we move into what day is today like? So globally, today is Safer Internet Day. I think that's important for so many different reasons. In the United States, we're celebrating National Lame Duck Day and National Frozen Yogurt Day, which in my opinion don't go together all that well, but maybe somebody can find a creative way to combine those two things.
Yeah.
If you're British, you would have the opportunity to celebrate Ice Cream for Breakfast Day with all your fellow UK citizens. So
that's every day.
We should celebrate that every day.
I was going to say, that's every day. Come on, what do you mean?
I'm glad to hear that we don't let these international borders get in our way.
That's right. That's right.
Hey, I should mention also that February is Black History Month, and the theme this year is African Americans and the arts, which seems particularly embracing for for our arts advocacy community. That is hard to say. So our arts-focused Vashon Mori Islanders, I think, will be happy to hear that African Americans and the arts is this year's theme for Black History Month. And today, by the way, is also National African American Coaches Day in the U.S. Historically, today, Bruce, you will be glad to hear the Maori tribes of New Zealand signed the Treaty of Waitangi with Great Britain, intended to protect Maori rights in that country. I don't know if you want to reflect, Bruce. Is that getting any attention in Australia?
Yeah, not much in Australia, but February 6th is becoming a national, well, it is a national holiday, but it's becoming much more celebrated, much more like the 4th of July in New Zealand. And the Treaty of Waitangi, in the Waitangi Treaty Grounds, are just north of where Don was at Whangarei in New Zealand. What's distinct about sort of colonial relationships in New Zealand is that there was one treaty between the British Crown and all the Maori groups. And so unlike the United States, where we have hundreds of treaties with individual Native American groups, in Australia, where they have no treaties, New Zealand has one treaty, and it's basically become sort of the founding document of the New Zealand government. Certainly abused, certainly ignored at times, but the Treaty of Waitangi has become, like many treaties in the United States with Native American peoples, a basis for establishing Maori rights and reestablishing Maori rights in New Zealand. So it's an interesting day for New Zealanders.
All right. Also, this day in history, 1945, Bob Marley was born. He shares a birth date with Ronald Reagan, who was born 34 years earlier, and Reagan passed away 23 years after Bob Marley passed away.
Wow.
And in 1993, Arthur Ashe, the first black man to win a Grand Slam championship, also passed away. Hmm. Okay, so listeners know I'm fond of thinking about future history. And David, you already mentioned one about whether or not a president is liable for acts that they create, you know, acts they take during their presidency. There's a few more. Also, the Supreme Court of the United States is going to hear the appeal of the Colorado decision to remove former President Trump from their state ballot this Thursday at 7 a.m. local time. The audio of the proceedings will be streamed on multiple outlets if you want to tune in. And also, for possible future history, Mr. Mayorkas, who's in the current administration, his possible impeachment vote today in the U.S. House. And high crimes and misdemeanors or flim-flam? Hmm. I guess historians will have to tell us as we move forward.
Well, I heard they wanted to...
topics we might...
Yeah, I heard they wanted to deport him. So I don't know where he's, where his family's from, but that was the latest I heard. So that should be interesting.
Well, and despite my efforts, Donald Trump will be on the ballot in Washington. I did represent the group that was challenging his place on the ballot, but the law in Washington is quite different from the law in Colorado. And the judge ruled against us.
Okay, well, we'll see what the Supreme Court does and may yet right the apple cart, if you will.
Maybe.
Also, just for those who were paying attention to the news before we started, Jennifer Crumbly has now been accused 4 counts guilty of manslaughter. I'm not sure exactly what the charge is. That's not quite it. But for failing to keep her son from killing several people in a school shooting. And so who knows what will come of that, but certainly parents' responsibilities to help to manage the affairs of their children.
I thought she'd been found guilty, actually.
Additional consequences.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he said accused, but she was found guilty, right? Yeah.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, she was found guilty of all 4 charges. Involuntary manslaughter, I think, or involuntary homicide. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't her that created the shooting. It was her son. Lots of legal interesting.
We could get into the weeds on that one, Kevin. There was a lengthy... Yes. Instruction to the jury about there can be multiple causes of a homicide or a death, and the judge's emphasis on that I think will be one of the
grounds for appeal. Because as we know, you need more than just causation, you need fault. So
many interesting topics in the news today, but we'll see how many of those we get back to after we talk with our small talk guests, Don and David. So just to lead off, according to our friend Steve Bergman, Vashon Mori Island is among the leading communities in the nation when it comes to home solar installations. As of 2022, there were 400 solar generation systems on the island out of 5,553 PSE customers. So basically 7% of the PSE customer base, and that compares with about 3.7% nationally. Unfortunately, we know of only one community solar installation currently at the Vashon Harbor School, as friend Gib Damon mentioned during our October 24th show, which we basically understand that that serves basically the needs of the school, even though it is called a community solar installation. Also of note, the solar panels at the transfer station, which you drive in there, you see quite an array on the ground. They also serve only the energy needs of King County. They were installed under what is maybe curiously known as the King County Community Solar Program. So why do we have no true community solar programs on Vashon, the type of program where a person who doesn't have a sunny roof could subscribe to community solar? So as we get into that, let's first talk with Don about what he's done with his property. So, Don, I know it hardly seems necessary for you to tell us about your community services to Vashon Mori Islanders. That's true, David, of course, with yourself as well. But for the record, perhaps you want to tell our listeners a little bit about yourselves and why folks are right now thinking, hey, I know these two guys. So, Don, maybe we could start with you a little bit about your background and what you've done here to serve Islanders.
All right. Well, I grew up in a middle-class family in Michigan and went to Michigan State, graduated in 78 with a degree in veterinary medicine, and directly moved out to Washington State because I loved the outdoors, the sailing, the hiking, the accessibility to the ocean. And in 82, came out with a girlfriend at the time, bicycling on the island in April. It was a gorgeous day on Vashon, and found that there was a veterinary practice for sale. So bought the practice and been working at the practice for the last 42 years, minus one short sabbatical of 3 months sailing to Hawaii and back, and one longer sabbatical of a year and a half sailing through the South Pacific, 17,000 miles to New Zealand and back. With the first trip was all adults with two couples, and the second trip was my family of three kids and my wife and I. And the practice has been steadily growing over time. I started out with just a receptionist / kennel cleaner assistant and myself. And currently, I sold the practice several years ago. And actually, my partner at the time, my business partner, Nell Kaufman, and I sold the practice to our current owner, Dana Ness. And they have about 25 employees there at this point. Oh. So it's a very thriving practice with a very great clientele. We all know how compassionate people on Vashon are, and especially so for their animals. So we are very fortunate, all of us at the practice, to have people that are so compassionate, and that allows us to do good veterinary medicine. So in between those times, Stacy and I bought three parcels down in Burton, and we deconstructed two of them after much hullabaloo with the Historic Landmarks District, trying to let them see that all the powder post beetle damage and all the rifling through of the all the properties that had been rentals for decades would be not really worth saving. And so we built the Back Bay Inn, which is what we called it at the time, and operated it at a pretty significant loss for 8 years. And then realized that probably would feel a lot better to stop banging our heads against the wall. So we did so and unloaded the practice on with someone who was a front man for Tom Stewart. We didn't know it at the time, but Tom was the money behind the purchase for the next party to buy it. And then, of course, the property's been through about six more owners since then, but so be it. So, yeah, so I guess that's most of my story.
Okay, well, hey, thanks for sharing that background. And David, what would you like to our listeners to know about yourself?
I moved out to Vashon in 1984, following a short move to Seattle from Montgomery, Alabama, where I'd worked for Frank Johnson, who is a heroic judge who had protected the civil rights of black people, mentally handicapped people, basically anyone who needed representation in the law that wasn't getting it. He did that for 47 years and was a great mentor and friend. And then I moved out here. And after coming to the island in 1984, when I could rent a two-story house with great views over the water for $250, you know, I became a member of the community council and became the president in 86. And I guess no one else wanted it because I was president until 93. Actually, we had very good people working with us, including Craig, who took it over eventually. And then I had to leave Vashon in 2008 because my ex-wife had an autoimmune disorder and said she could not survive another winter here. And my children were young. So I went down to California and started practice all over as an attorney in California, which I did not like all that well, and stayed there until my son started college. And at that point, I said, okay, see you guys later. I'm moving back home because Vashon had become my home, and I consider it that way. And when I came back, I was surprised to see that the community council that had disbanded back in 2010, largely because by taking funds from King County operating funds, it had become considered an agency of the county and was therefore subject to the Public Records Act. So I knew some of the people on the board at that time, and I said, you know, you really should disband, but I had expected them to reform without taking the funds, and that just didn't happen. I came back, I was reading articles in the Beachcomber, Vashon has no voice, and I thought, how pathetic is that? Vashon had always been the squeaky wheel that made things happen. So I took it on myself to initiate a reformation of the community council, and it is now in the good hands of Diane Emerson. After I helped her out for about 2 years as president, and during that period of time, I also was a co-chair of the town plan committee back in the 90s, and I helped name the streets of Vashon. We had a street naming committee at Craig Harmling, the fire chief's insistence, because he was tired of getting directions to a fire like turn left at the Jesus Barn. And, you know,
or after the white dog.
Exactly.
So,
or where the white dog was run over, maybe. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Funny story is we had certain rules about that. One of them was that we couldn't name a street after a person who was still living. And we named a couple of streets. One of them was Asta Lane up in the North End, because Asta had been a fixture in that community for years and years. And so we put this out with the news about we weren't naming after any, you know, people who are still alive. And I get a call. Hi, I'm Asta. and I ain't dead yet.
Oh, that's so awesome.
But so, you can name a street after me if you want to.
Yeah, we kept it. We kept it. She's got Asta Lane. Anyway, so, and now I am on a small farm in the middle of the island, south of where Tom Stewart had his ranch. And I have a lot of open field there, pasture, and I had an old chicken coop foundation that was buried for 50 years under blackberries. And after recovering, well, pulling out the blackberries, and, you know, an excavator is a good tool for that. I was left with a foundation that was 210 feet long and 40 feet wide, and saw an opportunity to build a greenhouse there and also use it as a place for locating solar panels, because having the concrete framework there precludes it from much other, you know, farming use, but it would be a good place, I thought, to put solar panels should the right circumstances arise.
Just fantastic.
Just a quick question. Do you know how many you would be able, how many panels you would be able to install there, Dave?
It depends on how large an area I really want to use. That specific area is about 240 or 2,400 square feet.
Oh, 2,400. Okay.
Yeah.
Is it oriented so that the long length runs east and west?
Yes. Oh. Yeah. It would be facing west. Excuse me? The panels.
So it would if it was facing south.
No, it would face south. It would face. Sorry.
Okay.
The panels would face south, okay. And they would get the sunlight most of the day, almost the whole day. Oh. Yeah.
All right. Fantastic. Well, definitely, we want to be talking about that potential that you raised there, David. I was thinking about the, you know, only those who have passed away can be named after, you know, streets can be named after them. That does seem a hazard to living community leaders on the island. So I'm glad to see you got that out of the way some years ago now. Well, hey, I wanted to jump in again. You know, Steve Bergman mentioned that the data from PSE says that we really have an amazing number of solar home systems in our island here. Don, Steve tells me he's also particularly interested and impressed with the system that you installed at your home. Why don't you tell our listeners a little about it?
Well, when Nell Kaufman and I sold our practice, I had some money laying around. So, and I have always been one that's up for a challenge and projects. So I had been looking around for PV solar applications and found on just a Google search there was this huge commercial dual axis tracking system that was in Toledo, Spain, and there I counted the panels and I think there was like 120 panels on this thing. So if you figure that was 200 watt per panel, you know, you've got 24,000 watts of or 24 kW of solar absorption. So I kind of took a look at this very cryptic picture that I saw and designed with my eldest son, who's trained as a naval architect and marine engineer, and came up with a design for a 24 by 24 freestanding on a 12-foot column, an array that rolls around a 24-foot diameter chase or a race. So there's concrete that's a foot and a half wide in a circle of diameter 24 feet, and there are coming off of this column that's 12 foot tall. there are struts that will support the array, and there are 36 panels that are 200 watt panels each, and it was built so it's been in service for a little bit over 10 years. October it commissioned into service, and I had welded all the aluminum components of it per my son's sort of his design engineering, and so I've got this dual axis tracker that, like I say, has been in service for a little over 10 years and has produced about 98,000 kilowatt hours of power since then.
So does this actually track the sun then?
Well, it's supposed to. It has both a linear actuator, which deals with the attitude of the array, and it has a slew drive at the base aspects of the column that allows it to track azimuthally. Wow. And so there is a controller box that controls it, but at this point, the gentleman who had, just out of the kindness of his heart, Jim Boardman, had done all the acquiring of the hardware for the controller and did the software design of it. And I think just over the years, he got tired of me calling him up every quarter and saying, let's see if we can make this just a little better. And so he's kind of peeled off of the thing, and now it's just controlled virtually manually. But I would invite any listeners out there that if you've got experience in doing any sort of controlling of electromechanical devices, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, one more question. Is that, are you at net zero now? Or are you supplying all of the energy needs for your home?
No, we were at the onset, we were supplying about 90% of our needs. And it is a grid connect system. So, of course, the times when electricity is being produced the greatest is in the middle of the day on a sunny day. And at least when I was working, nobody would be home and we would have the least amount of need for that electricity. And so PSE just acts as your battery bank, and you get zero loss for the production. Whereas if you had a battery system, you would get frictional loss every time you changed from the high voltage, well, I call it high voltage, it's like 600 volts DC, which goes into the inverters, then gets inverted to 240 and then AC, and then goes through my panel down in my mechanical room and gets used by the house. If it's not used, then it just goes straight into the grid.
Okay, Don. I need you to Dick and Jane this for me a little bit. in terms of benefits, I need it SDS, simple, dumb, stupid. How much money are you saving? Are you making any money off of this? Or, just for the person who hasn't gotten into this yet but is really thinking about it, what can you tell us about the benefits?
Well, if you want to have it be in the simplest of terms, 10 cents per kilowatt hour is what you spend at the very cheapest. It's actually continually gone up from that. When I first started, I think the base rate was somewhere around 9 cents, and I think it's more like 11 cents for a first tranche of electrical use, and then it goes up from there. So at say it was 100,000 kilowatt hours, that would be $10,000. So it certainly cost me a lot more than that to build and to purchase the equipment. Artisan Electric was very instrumental at allowing me to purchase the raw materials for the inverters. There's two inverters and the 36 panels. And
At the time, Washington State had a very lucrative solar incentive program where if you purchased all Washington-built equipment, you would get 54 cents a kilowatt hour for every kilowatt hour you produced, regardless of whether you used it all up, which I did, up to an amount of $5,000 a year. And so for the first 7 years of production, and that sunsetted either three or four years ago, but that $5,000 production incentive sunsetted away. And so I got an extra $5,000 each year as a production incentive from PSE. It got to the point where there was so much production incentive being paid out that they had to curtail it. And then now Washington State is doing a different program, which because I don't qualify, I'm not very familiar with it, but I know there is some production incentive all administered through Washington State University.
You know, it's obvious that you can't use all of the electricity that's created right at as it's being created, just uniformly. How do you store it? How much storage do you have?
Zero storage.
Oh, you
that's
have
what
zero storage.
That's
okay.
What I was saying. It's grid connect. So my meter runs backwards when it's producing more than I'm making, and then it runs forward when, you know, at night when there's no production and we're cooking dinner and we've got our ground source heat pump providing heat through the floor and charging up our electric car. And so
have you considered storage?
I at this point in time, battery storage is too expensive for the benefit, in my opinion. Plus, there again, you get your loss in efficiency that you don't get any loss of efficiency when you're running it through PSE as them acting as your battery.
Right. You know, it's obvious that there's more to just saving a dollar involved in putting in solar. There are the societal issues of the environment that you're contributing to. When you decided to put this in back 10 some years ago, what was the motivation? What was the tipping point for you that said, I'm going to spend this money and put this in?
Well, to be honest, the tipping point was the economic advantage that the solar incentive had at that time. I was bicycling back to the island. I was on the ferry and saw that Larry Eyster, another island gentleman who had done solar before me, he and I were just talking on the ferry. And he explained that program to me in terms that I could understand. I had had solar panels on our sailboat when we sailed into the South Pacific, along with a wind generator. So I've always been enthralled with renewable energy and felt like it was the thing of the future. And so that just took it for me. I mean, that was enough for me to say, okay, I'm going to do this thing. I don't care what the costs are for the mechanism and all the stuff that makes it into a tracking device, knowing that when you track, you can get 25 to up to 40% more power for the same module as you can with a static array. When you're looking at a curve of solar production with a static array, it looks just like a bell curve. You know, you've got in the morning because you're just the solar insulation is just glancing off the array or not even at all in the summertime because in the summer the sun rises in the northeast and it sets in the northwest. And so you get absolutely nothing until it actually starts to the panel sees the sun. And then only when the sun is normal to the array do you get your greatest amount of production? And so when it's a tracking device, it's normal to the sun all the time.
So the expense that you, the extra expense, does that pencil out is what I'm asking. Does it pencil out for the extra expense to put the tracking in and the amount of production?
It did production? For me because of that solar incentive program.
Yeah, okay.
So I've earned roughly $50,000 at this point, which is about how much the total system costs. And the modules have a 25-year warranty on them. So I'm 10 years into that 25-year warranty and expect to have another 15 years of production where electrical rates will continue to go up and up and up. And my production it'll go down a little bit, but they guarantee that you'll have greater than 80% of your original production at the end of 25 years.
Yeah, I read that they can degrade up to 1% a year. That's what I read. So, curious.
All right. Well, hey, we do definitely, Don, there's lots more questions I'm sure we could ask, but we are getting down to like the last 13 or 14 minutes of the show. We definitely want to hear from David. David, you mentioned some years ago your interest to install a large solar array on the property you just described. What have you done so far, and what are your hopes for the future for that installation?
Well, I've just been gathering some information, and I was essentially waiting until there was an economic tipping point, such as Don had with his incentive program. I was hoping that the new statute that was going to make it through the legislature would provide the incentive for community solar, but unfortunately it died in the legislature this year, and I am not in a hurry to build this. I want to do it when the time is right, so I believe I'll be waiting to for the next legislative session and trying to help this bill along. It's a large enough area so that it would be far more than what I could use. My needs personally are not large for electricity. So what I'd like to do is share it with my neighbors. And if I could do that and benefit from it economically, or at least break even, then I would go forward with this. But until I reach that point, I'm not making large steps.
So the question is, the community solar that did fail in the legislature. It did not.
It did.
Okay. Yeah. Did it just not come out of committee?
It did not come out of committee.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So there's the potential for it maybe next year to
right.
be reintroduced.
That's right. That's
okay.
Right.
Yeah, so, we do, Truman, have a little information from Mason, who of course joined us on a previous show to talk about that legislation. Right. He said that unfortunately there was a modification to the bill, an amendment which basically would have put the ownership of community solar into the hands of the utilities. It would have given utilities the right to basically say how much refund of extra power, how they would price that. So as Don mentioned, you know, in his early experience, that you know he got paid a pretty good rate for that power he generated. This amendment to the bill would have left the utilities in charge of how much money David would generate when he produced any extra power. And apparently it also, the modification to the bill removed some consumer protections. So Masons and his team said, you know, this doesn't look like it's going in the right direction, so let's just stand down, come back again next year.
Also, I'm thinking that storage would be something that I would want to look into, and a way to enhance the grid on Vashon. We have too many power outages on Vashon, and it would be nice to be able to provide electricity for the neighborhood if something like that were to happen, and have perhaps the wiring undergrounded. So these are all things that, you know, could be looked at.
My understanding, by the way, is that, speaking of that, is that if you do have a solar array, and Don, you can jump in on this, that if you do have a power outage, that solar array will not provide your power. Is that correct? Do you have that issue?
That's absolutely correct, because they don't want you producing power that could backflow into the grid and electrocute the linemen that are doing repairs.
So with the power outage, you're just stuck. You don't use. There's no way that you can just divert it to your own use, correct?
You would have to have a more complicated system than I do, right. So that you would isolate, and I don't know whether the state would allow a system to have both, where you had a either or system that would go into your battery bank and then not jeopardize people.
Actually, that is available. I've been looking at the airport about putting in solar at the airport. Mm-hmm. I'm an airport commissioner. And one of the things that we learned was that, yes, it is possible to provide power, but it's extremely expensive for the equipment that would be required to do that. Mm-hmm. And you would need the battery backup and all of that. So
right.
I find that interesting that the power outage, the solar will not benefit.
Yeah, once batteries become efficient enough and cheap enough so that you're not spending, like with Tesla's Powerwall, right. You know, you're looking at, you know, 200 plus per kilowatt hour, and it's just not economically right. viable right at this point.
Exactly.
Bruce, I don't know if you had your hand up to ask a question there or not.
Oh, no, not a question, just a comment. Steve Bergman's yeah. installation, you know, has battery storage. And so power outage, he offers the community to come by and charge up your phones, charge up your laptops, whatever. So it is possible. And if you design it correctly, you can have power during a power outage. But again, like Don said, you have to make sure it doesn't feed back into the system.
Well, of course, you have that same issue if you have a home generator. I mean, you have to have an isolation,
right.
you know. So I wouldn't think right. it would be that complicated, but evidently it is. I don't understand the technology enough to know, but. Okay.
Yeah, and along those same lines, you know, those with electric vehicles, Don, you mentioned you have one. You know, the notion that you can plug your electric vehicle into your house. I hope that technology is available. You see it on advertisements, but whenever I've asked the question, it says, that's still a year or two away. The technology certainly can support that. I'm just not sure when it will become on the market, right, and how affordable it will be.
Well, I think Ford currently does have that system, and there may be other auto manufacturers that do, but Tesla has, in my mind, specifically avoided that as a possibility.
Mm-hmm. All right, David, you mentioned a couple of benefits to community solar. I'm just curious if you wanted to expand on that, because you know, community solar is a different investment than the type that Don is talking about, where his power needs are met, and just like it's sort of equal, right? He uses about as much power as he generates. A community solar is different. You're generating way more power than you need. What brings you to the notion that, yeah, this is really something you'd like to do?
Well, I have a good situation where I'm located for solar in that there's a lot of light. There are these concrete boundaries to this area that would preclude it being used as farmland. So why not mm-hmm. use it for the benefit of the community? I mean, that's just...
There's a highest and best use argument there that I'm liking the sound of. Yeah, Truman, what do you think?
Yeah, there's one thing that I wanted to point out. One of the issues that we are dealing with at the airport is that of impervious service, and you already have that. I mean, mm-hmm. it's already impervious. But it's my understanding that solar panels do not contribute to that impervious service, that if you put your solar panels just on the ground, then there's enough water comes through that system that it's not considered impervious, and that comes from the stormwater management department.
And that's
of
that's
King
a
County.
Good thing. It will the rain will fall off the
right.
the
yeah.
panels.
So yeah. I think there's like a half inch space in between them or whatever. So, and I'm sure Don, you don't have that issue because yours don't take up that big a footprint, right?
No, really. All it is the concrete race around the perimeter of it and the foundation of the column.
Right. Interesting.
All right. So let's see. We did kind of skip over some of the questions we planned. Thanks, Craig. Looks like David has a comment.
Yes. The impervious surface was not the only issue, though, in terms of having these panels in areas that could otherwise be used to a better use, such as farmland.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, got it.
All right. Okay. Any other questions in closing for either Don or David that we want to make sure to hear their thoughts?
No. Okay. Just say that I am absolutely fascinated with the possibilities. and Don, yours is amazing. I mean, I would love to see that set up sometime.
Yeah, me too.
Yes. Well,
be happy to show.
Okay.
So hopes were that we could encourage our listeners to support that legislation that David mentioned. It is House Bill 2253. It'll have a new number next year because we're in our second biennium of the legislative session, blah, 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 blah. It'll be renumbered next time. But nonetheless, our listeners can join a system called Take Action Network. Again, another bit.ly address coming up, but you can join Take Action Network to sign up for legislative actions on this type of legislation and others that are basically you can choose the issues that you care about so that you can understand how you can move some of these bills forward. So we can advance the things like community solar here on Vashon. So if you go to bit.ly, bit.ly/Vashon with a capital V, followed by no spaces, capital T, capital A, capital N, bit.ly/Vashon Tan, follow the instructions to receive notifications about how you can influence your legislators to make sure we pass this kind of important legislation for us. All right. Thanks, Don and David. Really appreciate you sharing your thoughts about the work you've done already on solar, as well, David, as the future. Anything else you'd like our listeners to know about before we close out on this?
No. Thank you for the invitation.
Appreciate being
here. Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's see. I do also, one other piece of news that I think that we want to mention, South Carolina presidential primaries. Biden won 76.2% of the vote. Marianne Williamson, 2.1% of the vote. And Dean Phillips, who is a U.S. representative, 1.7%. Just curious, does it surprise us that Arthur Williamson would win more of the vote than Minnesota U.S. Representative Phillips? Any thoughts on that?
Name recognition, perhaps? I don't know.
Marianne does have a lot of books out there. I was surprised. I went out to do a search of that, and she's probably got at least a dozen.
We live in a media culture.
Exactly.
And Phillips does not have much media.
There you go. Okay, so tonight, if you have not put it on your calendar already, the Nevada Democratic presidential primary. So you want to check out that. Thursday, Nevada and Virgin Islands hold the Republican presidential primaries. So we shall see how things go in that front. I do want to say thank you for David, Don, Bruce, Craig, Truman, and myself. Thanks for joining the Briefly today. Listen in next Tuesday when Dr. Stephen Norris and Steve Ice return to join us once again to discuss the evolving state of accessibility here on Vashon Maury Islands. Really appreciate folks tuning in today. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.
See you later.
Thank you.
Bye now.